Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, hosting the Asian Festival, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. February 1st. It's a day of hands-on activities for kids and families with music, dance, martial arts demonstrations, food vendors preparing authentic Asian dishes, a gallery of bonsai trees, and other attractions. Details and ticket info at asianfestivalsa.com.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
Mexican-American students at a school in the Valley community of Ed Couch have been demonstrating for what they say are their rights.
Students in the Rio Grande Valley walked out of class in 1968. They were protesting what they believed to be discriminatory policies directed at Mexican-American students, including a ban on speaking Spanish on campus.
Why is it very important to you that you be allowed to speak Spanish on the school grounds?
Well, that's our mother tongue, so I don't see why it should be taken away from us.
We're born of Mexican-American parents, and we have to speak Spanish to them, and they want us to forget our native tongue. I don't think that's fair for us.
It wasn't just Ed Couch. Los Angeles, California, Crystal City, Texas, San Antonio's Edgewood Independent School District, Weslaco. The list goes on. Chicano students across the Southwest walked out and boycotted classes in the late 1960s and early 70s. They wanted equality and social justice. Today we're speaking to two individuals with firsthand knowledge of the conditions that inspired the walkouts. Mario Compián is co-founder of MAYO, the Mexican-American Youth Organization, and La Raza Unida Party. MAYO played a large role in staging the school walkouts 5 decades ago. Aurelio Montemayor testified in 1968 at a civil rights hearing in San Antonio that focused on the challenges facing Mexican-Americans. Montemayor and Compián were co-chairs of a recent conference in San Antonio that focused on the Chicano student walkouts 50 years later. Compián says the struggle for equality in schools goes back farther than the 1960s.
Since the early 1930s in Texas, there were individuals who were active trying to improve educational opportunities for Mexican Americans in the state. The issue historically was one, discrimination and inequity in terms of resources that were allocated to the individual school districts throughout the state where Mexican-American kids were concentrated, and that the resources were distributed unequally, but LULAC mounted a campaign through the courts to equalize the conditions, these resources, for Mexican-American kids. In fact, in the early 1930s, for example, LULAC filed a lawsuit against the school district in Del Rio on those issues. And there, again, it's pressure for change from the community coming from or emanating from the fact that there's unequal distribution of resources and racially based discrimination. So those two go hand in hand. Historically, those two forces were there by the time we came on the scene in the 1960s, that those forces had accumulated a huge weight against our community so that educational opportunities for our kids were critically limited. Literally, we can say it's a dead end. Kids entered school, and by the time they were ready to, it was time for them to go into the middle school, they would be out. The strategy for change that was based in the court fights by LULAC, really over time in 2 or 3 decades, had failed to achieve significant results. And as we came on in the scene, as young people concerned about those conditions, wanted to change, we said, well, that strategy didn't work. What do we need to do to change? What is it that we can do differently that will be more effective? So then by then, of course, you have nationally the African-American civil rights movement is in full force. So that provided a window for us to look at that we could borrow from, if you will, so that we began to adopt some of those strategies.
And so, Aurelio, there were many different reasons, as Maria was saying, why students saw their treatment as other compared to schools that were receiving more funding, more equity, that had a higher Anglo population, for example. Schools were deteriorating. Teachers weren't qualified. Bathrooms didn't have running water. Can you explain how issues like that also helped influence the Chicano movement, the Chicano student walkout movement, and how it seemed to spread across the Southwest?
I connected with the movement in the summer of 1968, and I'd been a classroom teacher. I was already aware of, for example, the forbidding of Spanish. I grew up in Laredo. I was teaching in another border school in San Felipe del Rio. And an accumulation of the hurts, of the classist restrictions, of the racist restrictions, was real clear to me, and it was clear to the students, although there hadn't been a mechanism to protest. In 2 weeks, I was into the Chicano movement. Everything made sense. What I had seen in the Black movement now made sense within our movement. I didn't realize there was a movement. And so the first thing I did was connect with my ex-students, because they all immediately knew that something was wrong. A lot of them, or their older brothers, were cannon fodder in Vietnam, an unjust war. I saw counselors, and they knew it. They're saying, join the army, maybe you'll be worth something, because they were 2 or 3 years behind. And it really hurt deeply to me that I saw the students as human beings. I saw the system was seeing them as dumb, as not college material, and the students knew it. It was really clear. Because it wasn't just anger at racism. It was a pride in who we were and the need to say who we were. There were no textbooks that in any way gave value to our history, and the students knew it, because at home they would hear their parents talk about traditions and many other things. Everybody knew that we had a lot of heroes from the Second World War in the Chicano community, but at the same time, it wasn't acknowledged in textbooks, in the histories. You know, the Texas history was a white racist history, demeaning the work of Mexicanos, who actually were the ones that built the whole ranching industry and cattle industry. When all that comes together, and then you see that the schools, instead of being an avenue for your liberation and for you getting a better life, are keeping you down, it wasn't hard for students, high school students, to organize around it. It was palpable. Nobody had said, you can do it, and all you needed was that magnet. So the Mexican-American Youth Organization that Mario and others organized was the perfect vehicle. It was started by college students, but the target was the high school students, because they were the ones actually living through those problems. English teachers that made fun of their English and all that other stuff. Just like Mario said, we were seeing the growth of the Black movement, getting people registered in the South, all that was going on. And so we chose the word Chicano as an affront to all the ones that wanted to accommodate and use Latin American or Spanish. No. We choose our own word, and even though some of the others would say it's a Pachuca word, we're proud of it. And I've got a degree, and I tell you, I'm proud of the word. So that was part of the cultural context, which is very important. And also, when you march out of school and with support of your families, it's a very important, aggressive tactic that, number one, is noticed. And it's not that slow going to court or let's do it in a kind of a more polite way. No, why be polite? Racism isn't polite. And so it was having large meetings and saying, Viva la raza, Chicano power, and stuff like that, that built a youth culture of resistance to racism, but on a very positive side, saying, we are worth something, our language is worth something, our culture is worth something, the books have to be written. There's a lot of stuff that has to be recorded, because our history is not in the textbooks, and these young people knew it. A lot of them got into college. In fact, a lot of them became majors in the Chicano studies, because those also, out of the walkouts, the Chicano studies came out, the Plan de Santa Barbara, and stuff like that. We need to make sure that our culture and our history is integrated into textbooks and in the whole country, as for other groups, peoples of color. In other words, it's not just a narrow focus on just us. It's just saying the history of this country was made by many groups, many cultures, many poor people working very hard. Their history and culture has to be integrated.
We just barely got Mexican-American studies approved for public schools in Texas within the last couple of years. We have seen Chicano-Chicana studies in universities now for several years, but it's barely being introduced into public schools. And Aurelio, I don't know what comments you might have to make about that. It's been a long road, and I know we still have a long road to go.
I want to go back a little bit to an experience I had when I was a teacher. Two students had been my students when they were in junior English with me. The counselor had told them to join the military to see if they'd be worth it. They were killed in Vietnam, and when they came back, the recruiter came and had a general assembly in our high school, which is 99% Mexican-American, and said, trying to recruit them to honor these two heroes. Hell, they weren't considered anything until they were dead, and now they were heroes. And it really, really made me furious that that was the value they were giving them. And I really didn't like the use of our deep patriotism in that way to work against those that were organizing to support our civil rights. Banks were still redlining, and that's why our barrios don't have a lot of good structures, because every institution has a racist structure to it, and you can see it in health. And that was a battle that we had to face constantly because it was a misuse of the deep patriotism in our own community. And sure, a lot of our soldiers died in the Second World War and the Korean conflict. We're a very brave culture and connect our patriotism to that. And then somehow it's used against organizing for our civil rights. And that's always been, it's still a dilemma now, although I don't think it's as heavy as it was 50 years ago.
Aurelio Montemayor is Family Engagement Coordinator with the Intercultural Development Research Association, a group that aims to achieve equal opportunities for children in public schools. Mario Compian is President of Academia America, a group that provides education programs and services to immigrants. He's also co-founder of the Mexican-American Youth Organization and La Raza Unida Party. Compian and Montemayor were co-chairs of Walkout, the National Chicano Student Walkouts Conference held in San Antonio in November. When we come back, the legacy of the Chicano Student Walkouts lives on today.
If there are young people listening to this program, then I would say to them, it's your turn.
More with Mario Compian and Aurelio Montemayor next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
Somebody was issuing out protest signs. We want a gym, not a barn. Walk out. We need better books, better facilities.
We did not have the things that other schools had and other districts had to be able to have that be up to par with our education.
The point was that a lot of us didn't want to go into vocational fields. A lot of us wanted to go into professional fields. And we weren't being given that guidance, and we weren't being made aware of scholarship money and financial aid.
Those are memories shared by participants in the 1968 Edgewood ISD walkouts in San Antonio. The audio is from a presentation produced by the San Antonio Association of Hispanic Journalists in 2008 for the 40th anniversary of the walkouts. Mexican-American students across the Southwest walked out of class 5 decades ago. They demanded equal treatment, better conditions, and access to higher education. Today, we're talking with Mario Compian and Aurelio Montemayor, co-chairs of Walkout, the National Chicano Student Walkouts Conference held in San Antonio in November. It highlighted the history and advancement of education in the 5 decades since the walkouts. Compian was a co-founder of the Mexican-American Youth Organization and of La Raza Unida Party. He says the demands students asked for 50 years ago still apply today.
I would say that we've gone full circle. We're back where we started. The source of that current conditions are at the very highest levels of government in the United States. The president has made it okay for people to come out and say, you go back home where you came from. Well, I came from here. That's where I'm at. So, but we're having to rebuild to fight that struggle over again because of what's come to be now in the last 4 years with the administration.
We have always resisted. There's always been work done to regain our land, to regain our rights. I was here before this was Texas. On my mother's side, they were connected to a land-grant family in Laredo, which already throughout the Native American, but it's much older than when Texas was started. And so, you know, those memories have to be put into our history books. But more than that, I think that it's important to recover the work of all those escuelitas that people did in the 30s and the 40s. They had little schools because the schools weren't teaching us. They weren't, you know, we had secondhand books and you know, stuff like that. And all that has not been documented well enough so that a teacher in the third grade or the 12th grade can tell the students, look what was going on. Your name is Martinez. There was a Martinez over here that was doing this. Your name is Montemayor. The man that co-founded Monterrey was a Montemayor. Oh, really? You know, that kind of stuff.
And Mario, we were talking about, we got to keep this history alive. And at this conference that was held in November, there was an effort to gather oral histories from people who were a part of the Chicano student walkout movement from 5 decades ago. Can you explain more about that and maybe what kind of stories you collected?
The participants at the conference were, you know, many of them were actual activists who were actors in the walkouts at various sites where they occurred in San Antonio and in the Valley and North Texas, in Abilene, for example. So those people came together and we had panels and talked about this history that Aurelius is recounting. The conference itself was important for that reason, that we're attempting to recover the history of the walkouts so that others can read and learn about them. Because, as Aurelio said, it is important they know that history, which also speaks to the importance of the Chicano Studies program, the curriculum that the community of practices is developing, and to put in the schools so that the younger generations can read about it, so that history not lost. First, this recovery, we have to recover what we've lost and then keep it alive in the books, in the classrooms, so that younger generations that are coming after us will be able to read that history and relate to who they are as kids, in families, in communities in Texas and elsewhere in the country. So that was the one really important part about the conference. The other important part of it is that it inspires new people, younger people, to be active. It rejuvenates the elders, you know, as well. Because we're proud of the work we did. Since the walkouts, the Chicano movement, there have been several generations of scholars that had begun to form, develop, right before the Plan de Santa Bárbara. But the Plan de Santa Bárbara served as an inspirational event. What the plan called for was the implementation of the Chicano Studies programs across the country and the universities, but also the formation and the unification of the student Chicano movement, the youth movement in the Mecha groups. So it's inspiring, fulfilling, personally rewarding. We saw some of that at the conference.
And Aurelio, the Chicano student walkouts were referred to more than once when students started walking out of class just a few years ago in response to the Parkland shootings mm-hmm. in Florida. Can you discuss a little bit more about that legacy?
Well, youth organizing is very powerful. As the young people from Parkland showed in their work, the power is there, and we wanted this conference to add new energy, saying people did this 50 years ago, and there are currents right now of young people. I'm not as concerned about my legacy. I don't care if I leave a legacy, but that the young people learn from the mistakes and the successes we had 50 years ago, that they understand that there were many people that marched and got no direct benefit. Some did, but many didn't. Some families suffered. Some people lost their jobs. But those walkouts, in fact, led to, for example, if you follow from Brownsville all the way to El Paso, almost every school district has a majority of Mexican-American teachers, superintendents, and administrators. Now, that doesn't mean that everything has changed because everybody's trained by a system that's racist. So a lot of times when you get your degree, you're whitewashed, and so you have problems. The internalized oppression works. But at least these are brown faces, you know. We're not being ruled by white faces. There's other challenges still. So that the walkouts did have many direct effects. The walkouts led to our independent political party, the Raza Unida Party. And it had its short life, but also had great impact. It showed that there was voting strength in the community, and it made many people aware of that their vote counts?
At my age.
I won't ask.
at my age, as I look back, you know, the past half century, I can see that there's a legacy collectively, the young activists of that time left for the future generations. As Jarelo said, it's not so much a personal legacy, but a community legacy. And that's what's important. If there are young people listening to this program, then I would say to them, it's your turn. Research the archives, learn about your history, your community, your family history, and then move forward from then.
Mario Compián is president of Academia America, a group that provides education programs and services to immigrants. He's also a co-founder of the Mexican-American Youth Organization and La Raza Unida Party. Aurelio Montemayor is family engagement coordinator with the Intercultural Development Research Association. They were both conference co-chairs of Walkout, the National Chicano Student Walkouts Conference. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham, and our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.